water, which we drink a little of, and electrolyze the rest into fresh hydrogen and oxygen to run the fuel cells. Craig shook his head. Great! You've invented the perpetual motion machine. Yeah, sure. I'm not that doofo, Wiley. We'll lose hydrogen all the time, I know that. But the loss will be slow enough so we can use the fuel cells for overnight power all the way out to Ares Vallis and back to the generator. Save the batteries for backup. You done the math? I did some rough numbers. I'll put it through the computer as soon as you give me an accurate fix for the fuel cell's normal efficiency rating. Scratching his stubby jaw, Craig said, That data ought to be in the computer files. Okay, go get it. The older man hesitated. We'll need approval. I'll have to tell Jamie what we're planning to do, and he'll probably buck it up to Tarawa. Trumbull grinned his widest. Ask for all the approvals you want, Wiley, as long as we do it anyway. Now, wait a minute. What are they going to say? Trumbull interrupted. If they say no, they're effectively canceling the excursion, and we won't let them do that to us, will we? You mean, even if they say no, we go ahead anyway? Sure. Why not? How are they going to stop us? Use the fuel cells for overnight power? Jamie asked, not certain he had heard Craig correctly. It's sort of like turning a lemon into lemonade, Possum replied. Jamie stared at the display screen. Craig's unshaven face was dead serious. He appeared to be sitting in the cockpit in his coveralls. Dex must be right beside him driving. A glance at the data readouts on the displays beside the main screen showed that the rover was plowing ahead at a steady 30 kilometers per hour. It sounds risky to me, Jamie said, stalling for time to think. We've been through the numbers, Craig replied. It ought to work. And if it doesn't? Then we'll be riding along without a backup power system the way we are now. I don't like it. The alternative, Trumbull's voice interjected, is to scrub this excursion and come home with our tails between our legs. That's what your father wants, Jamie said. He had intended to wait until evening and speak to Dex privately about the elder Trumbull's ire. Dex's father had sent 3 replies to Jamie's last message within the past 12 hours, each one more furious than the one preceding it. A hand engulfed the view of the rover's cockpit and swiveled the camera to focus on Dex. Dear old Dad's prone to displays of temper, he said easily, grinning. Just relay his messages to me. I'll handle him. You just might be shooting down the funding for the next expedition, Dex, Jamie said. Trumbull shook his head vigorously. No way. Once we bring back this Pathfinder hardware, investors will be running after us with money in their hands. So that you can come back to Mars and loot it of anything else you can lay your hands on, Jamie thought. He pictured Trumbull in a conquistador's steel cuirass and helmet. A hand swiveled the camera again. I ain't worried about the next expedition, Craig said somberly. I just want to get through with this excursion in one piece. I'll have to talk to Tarawa, Jamie said, hating himself for bucking the decision upstairs. Okay, fine, came Trumbull's voice. It'll take us at least another week to reach the generator. Damn, thought Jamie as he went through the motions of continuing their discussion. Dex knows damned well that the farther out they are, the less chance of calling them back. Once he signed off and cut the connection to the rover, though, a different thought wormed into his consciousness. The longer they're out on their excursion, the longer Dex is away from here, away from Vijay. He hated himself even more for that. You all set? Rodriguez asked. Fuchida had the climbing harness buckled over his hard suit, the tether firmly clipped to the yoke that ran under his arms. Ready to go, the biologist replied, with an assurance he did not truly feel. That dark, yawning abyss stirred a primal fear in both men, but Fuchida did not want to admit it to himself, much less to his teammate. Rodriguez had spent the morning setting up the climbing rig while Fuchida collected rock samples and then did a half-hour VR show for viewers back on Earth. The rocks were sparser here atop Olympus Mons than they were down on the plains below, and none of them showed the intrusions of color that marked colonies of Martian lichen. Still, sample collection was the biologist's first order of business. He thought of it as his gift to the geologists, since he felt a dreary certainty that there was no biology going on here on the roof of this world. But down below, inside the caldera, that might be a different matter. Fuchida still had the virtual reality rig clamped to his helmet. They would not do a real-time transmission, but the recording of the first descent into Olympus Mons' main caldera would be very useful both for science and entertainment. "Okay," Rodriguez said, letting his reluctance show in his voice. "I'm ready whenever you are." Nodding inside his helmet, Fuchida said, "Then let's get started." "Be careful now," said Rodriguez, as the biologist backed slowly away from him. Fuchida did not reply. He turned and started over the softly rounded lip of the giant hole in the ground. The caldera was so big that it would take half an hour to sink below the level where Rodriguez could still see him without moving from his station beside the tether winch. "I should have read Dante's Inferno in preparation for this task," Fuchida thought to himself. "The road to hell begins with a gradual slope," he knew. "It will get steep enough soon." Then both his booted feet slipped out from under him. Diary entry. "Sometimes I think I'm invisible. They just don't see me. I'm in among them, doing my work, but to them I'm not there. I speak and they don't hear me. At least they don't listen. I'm as good as any of them, but they all look right through me almost all the time. Invisible. I'm nothing to them." Afternoon, Sol 49. "You okay?" Rodriguez's voice sounded anxious in Fuchida's earphones. "I hit a slick spot. There must be patches of dry ice coating the rock here in the shadows." The biologist was lying on his side, his hip throbbing painfully from his fall. "At this rate," he thought, "I'll be black and blue from the waist down." "Can you get up?" "Yes, certainly." Fuchida felt more embarrassed than hurt. He grabbed angrily at the tether and pulled himself to his feet. Even in the one-third gravity of Mars, it took an effort, with the suit and backpack weighing him down, and all the equipment that dangled from his belt and harness. Once on his feet, he stared down once more into the darkness of the caldera's yawning maw. "It's like the mouth of a great beast," a voice in his mind said. "Like the gateway to the eternal pit." He took a deep breath, then said into his helmet microphone, "Okay, I'm starting down again. Be careful, man." "Thanks for the advice," Fuchida snapped. Rodriguez seemed untroubled by his irritation. "Maybe I ought to keep the line tighter," he suggested. "Not so much slack." Regretting his temper, Fuchida agreed. "Yes, that might help to keep me on my feet." The hip really hurt, and his rump was still sore from his first fall. "I'm lucky I didn't rupture the suit," he thought, "or damage the backpack." "Okay, I've adjusted the tension. Take it easy now." A journey of 1,000 miles must begin with a single step. Mitsuo Fuchida quoted Lao Tzu's ancient dictum as he planted one booted foot on the ground ahead of him. The bare rock seemed to offer good traction. "You can't see the ice," he told himself. "It's too thin a coating to be visible." Several dozen meters to his right, sunlight slanted down into the gradually sloping side of the caldera. "There'll be no ice there," Fuchida thought. He moved off in that direction, slowly, testing his footing every step of the way. The tether connected to his harness at his chest, so he could easily disconnect it if necessary. The increased tension of the line made walking all the more difficult. Fuchida felt almost like a marionette on a string. "Slack off a little," he called to Rodriguez. "You sure?" He turned back to look up at his teammate, and was startled to see that the astronaut was nothing more than a tiny blob of a figure up on the rim, standing in bright sunlight with the deep blue sky behind him. "Yes, I'm certain," he said, with deliberate patience. A few moments later, Rodriguez asked, "How's that?" The difference was imperceptible, but Fuchida replied, "Better." He saw a ledge in the sunlight some 20 meters below him and decided to head for it. Slowly,